Johnny Logan's dad was a medical doctor, and his dad was also named John. And since he was a physician, like many doctors back then, John's dad supported the family by traveling to his patients. And the money was pretty good.
Be called, I guess, a general practitioner. He made house calls, and he charged in 1837, 37 and a half cents a mile to make a house call.
Which is
a chunk back in 1837, I think.
It's important to remember that General Logan's father was an immigrant. When Dr. Logan was 5 years old, he crossed the Atlantic with his family from Ireland. And when the young Logans came to this country, like many immigrants before them, they moved around a lot, traveling in a generally east to west direction.
They settled first in Maryland, stayed there a little while, went to Ohio. And then when the doctor went out on his own, he learned to be a doctor down in Natchez, Mississippi. After trading on the river, he traded horses back and forth on the river and ended up in Cape Girardeau.
Okay, which begs the question, what opportunities, what did he see across the river that made him move to Murfreesboro?
Well, he didn't move to Murfreesboro because there was no Murfreesboro. And I've asked myself that same question. He was a widower. He lost his wife and one child, and sold all of his slaves, kept a couple of indentured servants. Well, they were slaves till they came to Illinois. They were indentured servants. And I think followed the advice of a brother-in-law who was over here preaching in the Methodist Church in Brownsville, set up in Brownsville as a doctor. And at that time, Brownsville was the third largest city in Illinois and showed great promise.
It's also ironic that since General Logan made his mark in history by helping to defeat the South, Logan's mother, Elizabeth Jenkins, was from below the Mason-Dixon line.
She was from a family from the South, and when she came in to the area, was considered one of the most eligible of the young ladies who came into the area. And when a doctor and a widower saw her, he wooed her and wed her, and John A. Logan was their first child. She was illiterate. She could not read and write, but her husband would write letters home to her with political news in it, which I'm assuming someone read to her, so she was conversant on things, but she simply couldn't read and write.
While General Logan would go on to have a successful career as a lawmaker, a lawyer, and then later as a Civil War hero, it's important to remember that his father, Dr. Logan's contribution to Illinois, can still be seen today thanks to a friendship with another famous Illinoisan.
In your book, you write that Dr. Logan, going back to Johnny Logan's dad, Dr. Logan was a friend to the young Abraham Lincoln, which I thought was strange because Logan was a Jacksonian Democrat and Lincoln was a Republican, yet they still got along.
It's called compromise. What they did and where they worked together was in the moving of the state capitol from Vandalia to Springfield. So Dr. Logan supported Lincoln in wanting to move the state capitol to Springfield. And that can still be seen today when you look at Sangamon County. The county just north of Sangamon County, which was created at this time, 1839, was named Logan County after Dr. Logan, and its county seat is Lincoln.
We do know that John A. Logan was born in Jackson County in a wilderness area that we know today as Murfreesboro. And what about his childhood?
It was probably very similar to any pioneer child's home life, only he was upper middle class, so they had more money, but he still, from a young age, had a lot of responsibility. His father expected a lot from him. His father being an immigrant, you know, he told him one time, he says that, you know, no matter how poor you are, you can aspire to the presidential chair. So his father put a lot on him, and he was the oldest son. And from the age of 10 or so, he's been given responsibilities around the farm.
As Logan's mother had a lot to do with his dad's success, General John A. Logan's wife, Mary, was also a key part of his life.
And they had a unique marriage. Again, quoting from your book, Logan was somewhat atypical of his time. The Logan marriage was in many ways curiously modern. And again, this is the early to mid-1800s, curiously modern marriage. Can you talk about this?
Well, it was a curiously modern marriage in that Mary was a very well-educated woman. And Mary took a great part in her husband's life, so that she would write up some of his legal documents at night and all that. You know, she was an aide to him in his law business and in his politics. And that just got stronger throughout their life. What wasn't very modern was the fact that he started courting her when she was 16 and he was 29. She turned 17 and they got married, and stayed married until his death, and then she was a widow for 37 years.
And what about Logan's transformation on the issue of slavery?
He went from basically a racist, his thought changed, and it evolved over the war.
And a big reason for that change is a piece of paper which now sits in the basement of the Jackson County Courthouse in Murfreesboro.
There's a document downstairs, a facsimile of a deed in the courthouse, where Dr. Logan sold the last 5 years of an indenture for a young man that was his indentured servant. The young man was 17 or 16 and had to be 21. And Dr. Logan gave the guy kind of a half-price deal. And buried in that document is this statement by Dr. Logan.
And it's these 30 words written by Logan's dad that had a profound change on the young General Logan.
I'm not doing this just for the money. I'm also doing it because I don't believe that a parent, even if black, should be separated from their children. And I think when Logan went down south, that was one of those chinks in the armor there. You know, Dad wouldn't agree with this. I mean, this isn't something Dad would want to do.
And in a particularly pointed 1866 speech that he gave in Salem, Illinois, Logan didn't beat around the bush.
In this speech, he says, he's telling people why he thinks that the former slaves deserve citizenship. And one of the reasons was that any nation should protect its people. They should all have that. If you're not a citizen, you don't get the protection of the law. You're kind of in limbo if you're not a citizen. And two, he says that these people have earned their citizenship through their service in the war. And he's not necessarily talking as soldiers. He's talking about those people from the plantations, those escaped, enslaved people who would come to the troops, the Union troops, and help them. And he says, would ever we turn to the whites to help us save our great country, we got nothing. But when we turned to the black people who were down there, they would crawl through the swamps, they would do whatever they had to do to help us in our cause.
And after the Civil War ended, General Logan was so moved by the sacrifices made by so many people that on May 5th, 1868, Logan issued General Orders No. 11, which created a national day to honor those who died. We still celebrate it today. We know it as Memorial Day. Oh, and what about that nickname, Blackjack? When did he get it?
I have no idea what year. And it may have been something from childhood on. John was a common name. Jack is a nickname for John. And he was very dark complected. They had called him Swarthy. And they suggested that there was Native American heritage in his family line. If he did have that, it had to come from his mother, since his dad was Scots-Irish. Yeah. So that differentiated him from him. He's also called later in the war the Black Eagle. Okay. So it just has a little bit of ferociousness to it.
For WSIU In Focus, I'm Kevin Boucher.